Packers fans, welcome to the Green 19 podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined here by two luminaries of PackersNews.com coverage. That is Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein. A lot has happened since we last chatted. The Green Bay Packers making some moves in free agency. That is not always something we say out loud. And even in the Brian Gutekunst era, I don't know if we haven't seen anything like this. They add two pretty high profile names in Josh Jacobs, former Raiders running back, Xavier McKinney, safety from the New York Giants, who still isn't even 25 years old, which I find fascinating. But in the process, they also part with a couple big names. Aaron Jones, David Bakhtiari, no longer members of the Green Bay Packers, and Aaron Jones, now a member of the hated Minnesota Vikings. What a wild journey it has been over the last 2 days. I'm going to start with you, Tom. You've done a lot of reporting on this. You can find all of that at PackersNews.com, on JSOnline.com. So much has happened, and we'll go point by point through everything that has transpired. But now, just big picture to start with, I'm curious, first of all, if you think the Packers are done, if we've kind of reached the end point of their free agency experience. And number two, just as you sit back, what jumps to mind? What is the big takeaway from what we've seen thus far from the Green Bay Packers?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll correct you a little bit. This is really Brian Gutekunst's second foray into free agency. You know, 2019, he signed Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, Billy Turner,
Adrian Amos.
Adrian Amos. I mean, he went all in, and it was a significant expenditures for him. And now, if you look at it, you could probably say two of those were, worth the money. I mean, Adrian Amos was solid, not spectacular, probably not worth the money, but solid. Preston Smith has been well worth the money. Za'Darius Smith was worth the money for a year?
Yeah, Pro Bowl.
Year and a half, 2 years.
Right? Yeah, he was great.
So with that in mind, I think what Gutekunst kept saying was, we have the money, or we're going to create the money to where we can make a splash signing if we want to. And I'm sure even at that time in his mind, he was thinking safety. We're going to get a safety, whether it's Antoine Winfield or McKinney or maybe one of the lesser guys. I think he was all in on trying to get one of those guys. And if Winfield would have been available and not had the franchise tag, I think they would have gone hard after him. So they end up going for Xavier McKinney, and they end up paying him a ton of money. I mean, they had to pay big money to get him out of New York. And we'll see whether he's worth $17 million a year. He's in the top five paid safeties. But to them, that is the signature of Jeff Hafley's defense. You know, if you go back to where this defense started, was in Seattle with the Legion of Doom. And who did they have in the back was Earl Thomas. And that guy just tied everything together for Seattle. They could do so many things in the secondary because they had a guy who could roam sideline to sideline. Could play in the box if he had to. And I think McKinney's a bigger player than that. I also think they had to have taken a look at him when the Packers played the Giants. And he was all over the place. I mean, he was in the slot. He was not so much in the slot, but he was in the box. He blitzed off the edge. He was in the middle. The Packers could not throw down the middle of the field in that game. That's not all due to him, but that's the kind of guy that they wanted, and they paid big money for him. The other part with Josh Jacobs, I think, was a necessity. I don't think they went in thinking they were going to sign him or Saquon Barkley. I think they were, insurance policies if something happened with Aaron Jones. And as we saw, the Aaron Jones thing broke down, and they went with Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, Ryan, I want to talk more about McKinney. I want to talk more about all of it, but I think we knew the Packers were maybe saving some, creating the cap space so that they could make a splash in free agency. Xavier McKinney actually might be kind of a surprise just because he was so obviously one of the guys that you would expect them to target. And then they went and got that guy. But the big maneuver that I think people are really interested in is this running back exchange. It's a very similar deal, this 4-year deal given to Josh Jacobs, that Aaron Jones signed for 4 years ago, and obviously he's 3 years younger now than Aaron Jones. But I think everybody thought Aaron Jones was coming back, and we talked about that here and figured something would work out. even in those moments after they signed Jacobs, like, wow, the Packers could have the top two, the best 1-2 punch in the league, but that wasn't meant to be. They end up releasing him. So give me your thoughts on that trade-off. You know, it's only a deal with 12 and a half guaranteed. It's not something that's going to tie them up financially, but losing Aaron Jones is big, and it isn't just stuff on the field. So give me your thoughts on what it means that the Packers have made essentially a trade, Josh Jacobs for Aaron Jones.
You know, if you just look at the two running backs on an island, the ceiling for Josh Jacobs is higher than the ceiling for Aaron Jones. Now, Josh Jacobs is not coming off his best season. In fact, he's coming off his worst. But the ceiling is higher for Josh Jacobs than Aaron Jones. And not only because Aaron Jones is entering his age 30 season and Josh Jacobs is substantially younger, 3 years younger, but in their careers to this point, Josh Jacobs at his best has been the NFL's rushing champion. He has been an all-pro. He has reached a level, he's shown it, that Aaron Jones, despite his greatness, and he has been great, he's the top five running back in Packers history. He has been a great running back, has never gotten quite to that level. I think what's sad for Aaron Jones specifically in this situation is as soon as they signed Josh Jacobs, my thought was, that's the ideal compliment right there for an age 30 running back mm-hmm. who that number is very real at that position. And longevity is very difficult. At this stage in Aaron Jones's career, he needed to be a running back two. And Josh Jacobs is as close to a running back one, as close to a workhorse running back has been that you'll find in the league now when two back systems are prevalent. It would have been a very ideal fit for him, except the human element. And I imagine the Packers were surprised as well that talks broke down, because just a year ago, Aaron Jones took a $5 million pay cut. So there's precedent. If you're willing to take a $5 million pay cut once, that's the precedent. You're probably willing to do it again, except this time he wasn't. And Aaron Jones wanted to maximize his dollar, which every professional athlete, especially a running back, should do. There's nothing wrong in that. If you think there's a problem with that, think about whatever field you work in, how you would feel if your employer came to you and said, you're taking a pay cut. Nobody would like that. That's not how we're wired. So it's not a problem that Aaron Jones wanted to maximize his earning potential. That's what every professional athlete should do. But the sad part is, and I remember, this might have been after Dallas, talking with Aaron Jones at his locker about the future. And he said, point blank, yes, he dearly wanted to return. He very much did. But he wanted to return in the same role. And he meant as much in the locker room as on the field. You know, he was the undisputed, as Brian Gutekunst said, the heart and soul of that locker room. He meant as much that as on the field. But Aaron Jones has always been in a two-back system, but he's always been one. Since early on in 2017 when he established himself as their top running back, he's always been one in that two-back system. Being running back two would have been a different role. And you wonder. The last thing I'll say is I go back to what Brian Gutekunst said right after the season about Aaron Jones wanting him to come back, the expectations he'd come back. The most, and that answer has been played around and been bandied about over the past couple of days. But the most important part of that answer wasn't that he expected him to come back. It wasn't that Aaron Jones was the difference maker that he was in the five games down the stretch last season, because anybody with eyes could see that. It was the acknowledgement that they had to keep him fresh and healthy on the field to be that difference maker. Brian Gutekunst was very aware of the age. He knows that it's very real for every running back. And he knew that the best position for him to be in for his own protection and the offense's protection was kind of that's taking a step back role, you know, not being a workhorse throughout the course of a season so that he is fresh late in the year. That was on Brian Gutekunst's mind at the very forefront of this offseason, and that didn't change. And ultimately, who knows what might have been, you know, if not for the human element. That would have been the ideal complement, but you'll see him in purple next year.
Tom, what do you think? What do you think the order of operations was here? Did the Packers entertain the idea of Josh Jacobs coming only after talks broke down with Aaron Jones? Was there a thought that maybe the two of them could coexist? You know, you did some reporting. There was reporting around I think everybody knew that Aaron Jones wouldn't be able to come back on the very same contract that he was on without some sort of restructuring. So we knew that piece would come into play at some point. But how do you think this exactly broke down for the Green Bay Packers?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that. You were there with me at the combine when, you know, I wrote the story on Aaron Jones. And let's sort of go through what the whole process was. So, you know, while I was there talking to people, they're telling me, you know, Aaron Jones is going to have to reduce his cap number significantly in order for him to stick around. I mean, he has a $17 million cap number. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my interpretation of that was, well, he's going to have to take a pay cut. He absolutely is going to have to take a pay cut. But I hadn't been told specifically. I've been told that he needed a cap number. So, you know, when I wrote it, you know, being one plus one equals two kind of guy, I said that it was a pay cut, you know, and the person who had told me about it reminded me that, you know, I said cap, and I was like, you're right. You did say that, and I meant to write that, but I had said cut. In my head, I'm like, well, duh, he's going to take a pay cut. So I went through all the scenarios, you know, that he might have to take a pay cut, that they could wind up just releasing him and letting him test the market. And then maybe he comes back. And I think ultimately the duh stuff actually happened. You know, they gave him a number. I believe it was about $6 million. This would have been at the combine. They wanted to cut his base salary in half. And through negotiations or whatever, you know, they could not get a number. Now, I don't know if the Packers number went down, but I think I'm pretty sure at the combine, you know, there were Gutekunst's walking the hallways and there's agents everywhere. And Josh Jacobs' agent comes by and says, hey, are you looking for a running back? Or, you know, Josh wants to play in Green Bay, or, you know, Saquon Barkley's agent, hey, we're looking for a new place, you know? And I think Gutekunst had this in the back of his mind that, okay, it's not going to cost that much to sign another back. So I don't know if he reduced the number he wanted for Aaron Jones. I honestly don't know what the final number was with Aaron Jones. But obviously, Drew Rosenhaus, Aaron Jones's agent, had a deal set up because he's smart enough. He knows how this works. And he had a deal probably with the Vikings for $7 million and was like, we're not taking less than that. And, you know, cleared it with Aaron Jones, and Aaron Jones was probably, yeah, okay. And I think what happened was when the Packers started to see that this Jones thing was not going to happen, boom, he's already knows Josh Jacobs and Barkley are you know, interested. And he calls one of them, or I think they must have liked Josh Jacobs a little bit better than they liked Saquon Barkley, which we'll find out whether that was the smart move. They both signed almost equal deals. So the price was pretty standard for those guys, $12 million. And that's how Josh Jacobs came along. And I think they told Aaron Jones, look, we're signing Josh Jacobs, and this is where it stands. You know, what do you want to do? Or, you know, now it's a different ball game. I think they really did want Aaron Jones back. I think they absolutely did not lie about that, but they wanted him at their price. And if you think about it, the difference is that he would have been playing for maybe with an $11 million cap number, if they were able to get a cut, but then they would have been on the hook for all his prorated money next year. Mm-hmm. And instead, you know, they get a $5 million cut in salary cap, and he's off the books for good this year. So when you look at it that way, I think that's how they looked at it. And we're like, okay, well, we're just going to have to chance it that Aaron Jones isn't going to run for 1,000 yards against us, you know, when he plays us in the U.S. Bank Stadium. And they lose a lot with Aaron Jones. Ryan is, you know, I don't need to say any more about it. He's a great guy in the locker room, just an unbelievable player when he's healthy. And I was thinking about it too. You know, he, all his injuries happened on grass, as I recall, you know, I mean, in Chicago twice, in Green Bay, tore the MCL. I don't know that he's had an injury. Maybe he has had one of those on turf, but he is really good on turf, and he's going to be good for the Vikings as long as he stays healthy. And then lastly, about Josh Jacobs, I think they saw him as a young guy, 26, who's got great hands. He has really good hands, and he's caught more than 50 passes in two seasons. He led the league in rushing two years ago. So, you know, he's a first team all pro. So I think he fits what LaFleur wants to do perfectly. They'll have to draft somebody. Now that'll be a higher priority to put next to Jones, I think.
Yeah. I still think they get multiple running backs, but go ahead, Ryan.
You mentioned, I don't want to gloss over this point that you mentioned because it's what I've been wondering myself. Just because I'm thinking what might have been, you know, in wanting Aaron Jones back. And if Aaron Jones is complimenting Josh Jacobs, that's the best backfield in the NFL. I mean, that is dynamic. Mm-hmm. And you think of total cash, right? The $6 million that you believe, the $7 million that he got, that's $1 million right there. So my question is, boy, do you pay an extra $1 million to have the best, most dynamic backfield in the NFL when you're a Super Bowl contender? But the point that you made, it's future cap as well. So it's not reality to only think of it in those terms, right?
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is, you know, they're done in free agency other than value kind of signings. Because 2025 is shaking out as a lot of dead cap money. You know, Devondre Campbell's money is going to be sitting there. You know, Jordan Love's contract's going to start to build after that. You know, they'll sign him to an extension in May and everything. Assuming let's say they do it after June 1st, then pretty much all that signing bonus money goes into next year and beyond. They've got a lot of guys who they had void years whose money comes due next year. And if they want to continue to be, in free agency, they can't keep building up 2025, or else they're going to be in cap trouble and not be able to re-sign some guys. So I think that they kept that in mind as well. I think you're right. I think they hardballed Aaron Jones a little too much. And I think him and Jacobs would have been, you know, boy, that would have been amazing.
Something to see.
Yeah. On the other hand, you know, if they get a back out of this draft, it turns out to be their future back, you know, if they do better than A.J. Dillon, you know, with a second round pick, if they wind up taking a Jonathan Taylor, you know, then then they made the right move, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of it depends on how they're going to draft.
Right. No, he went to the Vikings of all teams. And maybe it really was that was the deal that his agent found, and that doesn't really matter that that's an NFC North rival. But optically for Packers fans, this is a catastrophe. One of the most popular players on the team is now wearing purple. And I was curious on your thoughts on that, if you think there's more to it than just this was the best deal they got, which, by the way, I think sort of proved what the Packers pay scale would maybe be for a guy like Aaron Jones. You know, he didn't break the bank in Minnesota. But, you know, you've talked a lot about the leadership aspect. Football's got a huge roster, and obviously the quarterback needs to provide a certain measure of that leadership. And there's a lot of little rooms, little position groups. And to me, I guess not knowing enough about an NFL locker room, if there really needs to be a guy who galvanizes everybody, you know, maybe we oversell that. And there are little, you know, leaders in different rooms, and it's not about having that one guy. But if there were one guy on that team last year, it would be Aaron Jones. So I guess I'm curious, just as you ruminate on that, how can that be weighed into the decision at all when you decide whether or not to move on from a player?
Well,
it's a factor.
First of all, go ahead, Ryan.
It's a factor, but production's always way more important. I mean, being able to produce on the field regardless of position is always the ultimate evaluation, right? Look, Aaron Jones in Minnesota, say what you want about a vendetta. There's a human element. I'm sure that there's something to be said about earning, you know, maximizing earning potential. But if I'm Aaron Jones, I want to play on field turf too. I want to get as many games on turf as I can. And that was my first thought when he signed with the Vikings. It wasn't the vendetta. It wasn't even the market. It was, yeah, I'd want to be on field turf because he is dynamic on turf, always has been. There's a reason why he kills the Cowboys. He put him on turf, and he makes big plays, and now he has a chance to do that several more times than he would have in Green Bay.
So I will add that Aaron Jones, I think there's no question chance to play for the Vikings was, you know, I'm going to make them pay two times. And don't even, you know, play that down at all, because I think that is real. You know, he's going to want to really do something to him. You know, Jamal Williams did, and he did. He made the Packers pay kind of on that last game 2 years ago. Here's the part that confuses me, but I totally, Ryan made reference to this. He's got to make as much money as he can. You know, every contract, you got to maximize it. The thing that I wonder if he'll regret is he's got a better chance of winning a Super Bowl in his final year in Green Bay than he does in Minnesota. And all that stuff that they built, you know, he was a part of it. He was a huge part of it. And all the, you know, sweat, blood, sweat, and tears that he put in, he may not, if it happens this year, he won't get to enjoy it, which to me will be kind of, you know, from his standpoint, it'll be kind of sad. The other thing is, I thought that if he stays, he could become, you know, a Leroy Butler kind of guy within the state. He's so well-liked. You know, after his career is over, he could live here and live like a king, you know, and do all the live off of commercials and all that kind of stuff. He's that type of guy. So that's the standpoint. But, you know, $7 million is $7 million. And he might still be able to do the other thing. And whatever the case, Packer fans shouldn't be mad at him. He did what he thought was best in his interest.
Yeah. You know, Spoon, I'll even say it very well might have been his 2024 is his last season with the Packers, period. It might have been, because it was the last year of his contract. But if that tandem worked out the way it might have, that's how you prolong your career. He's a Packers guy in that role, and that secondary role, that dynamic kind of 10 to 12 plays a game, put him out on the field and get your 5 yards plus per touch. And maybe that would have been a role to prolong his career too. I don't think you can say that it absolutely definitively 100% would have been his last season with the Packers, no matter what. Because that's like the role that a guy like that, age 30 running back plus, who hasn't lost a step, you just got to protect him a little bit. You got to make sure he doesn't take that much of a pounding at this season. That is a tailor-made role for him, and that was there.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to put this all on Aaron Jones. The Packers easily could have paid that money and said, you know, $6 or $7 million, you stay. You know, we rolled the dice with David Bakhtiari for 3 years, you know, and paid him how many, 40-some million dollars for 13 games. So, you know, if I'm Aaron Jones, I'm like, well, you did that for him. Why wouldn't you do that for me? So I'm not going to let the Packers skate on this. It would have been a gamble to do it, and I understand why they didn't, but – if he, what would have been the difference in them winning a Super Bowl? You know, man, that's a bad, big mistake if it turns out that way.
Well, let's call the hardball what it is, right? And we've talked about this before, Spoon. Aaron Jones has been the definition of a good soldier. off the field too, in the locker room. I mean, when the trade went down last year with Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love, who was the first person to put all of his support behind Jordan Love immediately? Who went out multiple times last offseason to train in Southern California with Jordan Love, publicly and private? He has been the good, and that was while taking a $5 million pay cut.
Yeah.
He has been the good soldier. So now you're going to hardball me and bring in a veteran, a younger guy, but a guy that you're going to pay good money in the running back market to take away my snaps, that, you know, to diminish my role and, more importantly, my earning potential. I can see very easily how Aaron Jones would find that a slap in the face. I mean, that's what that is. So, yeah, absolutely not putting all that on Aaron Jones.
Ryan, I want to come back to you to ask you to switch gears and ask about your thoughts on the Xavier McKinney signing. You know, they didn't put, I don't think, a ton of resources into the safety position the last couple years. You kind of got the feeling maybe it wasn't, you know, that valued a spot on the field relative to others. But like Tom said earlier, Jeff Hafley's defense is a little different. So we knew they would have to get safeties. They needed bodies, if nothing else. I personally wasn't even thinking about Xavier McKinney because I figured they wouldn't go after the top guy on the list. I mean, this is a guy who turns 25 in August. He's never been to a Pro Bowl. There is some risk. He's had some injuries, but one was like a freak ATV accident, a hand injury, and he's kind of seen as this ascendant player, a little bit of the inverse of Josh Jacobs in that he had an incredible season last year, hasn't really been able to shine before that, whereas Jacobs had the down year last year and had shined before that. But Xavier McKinney is kind of the guy you absolutely would expect a team like the Packers would sign if you didn't have a track record of the Packers not going after the top guy in the free agency class. So give me some thoughts there. Do you feel like it was just they just couldn't get that type of guy in the draft? They had to do it. It was absolutely a move they simply had to make. Or, you know, are you still a little bit surprised that they decided to go all in on a safety?
I'm really not surprised that Xavier McKinney. I know there's some prevailing thought out there of, okay, Xavier McKinney is the top of the market, so Packers never go there. But to me, it just made too much sense for him not to be an option. And the biggest reason is because he's only 24. And what we know about Brian Gutekunst in free agency, especially because we've seen the blueprint already in 2019, is that he values youth. He'll pay for youth. You look at the splurge in 2019, Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, and Adrian Amos were all coming into their second contracts. Like, youth was a priority for him then. He didn't mind paying for it. You look at Xavier McKinney, only 24. He does everything well. It's the position that literally kept you from a potential Super Bowl run. Mm-hmm. They were way closer than anyone thought they would be to actually making the Super Bowl last year. No, it blew out expectations out of the water. And all year from the draft last season on, you thought, oh, they don't have safeties. If only that, you know, but they're not a safety away from the Super Bowl. Well, go back to the San Francisco game. Yeah, they're a safety away from the Super Bowl. Like, you know, that you can make a very compelling argument for that. It just made too much sense. Now, they got to get, and Spoon alluded to this, they're paying him as the fourth highest paid safety in the league. They've got to get number four safety production out of that for it to be for this signing to realize its potential. But I think the biggest thing that it does is it gives you optionality, because he does everything well, and you know that you need another safety. So if you have a Xavier McKinney that does everything well, there's no glaring holes in his game. He can track sideline to sideline deep, which they haven't had in Green Bay for a while. He's, what, a 5.7 missed tackle percentage. So when Jeff Hafley talks about that post safety being an eraser, that's an eraser. He can with his tackling, he can minimize mistakes on the back end. They haven't had that in a while at that position. He can go anywhere. So you kind of just match, you know, who's the next best safety available in terms of the value, in terms of the deal, whether that's draft, whether there's bargains in free agency, who do you like, and go match him with Xavier McKinney, because he can complement with anyone. I think that's when you know that you need two, getting the one that you can complement with anyone, that's wonderful optionality for a team.
Oh, so we've gone a half hour and haven't talked about David Bakhtiari. I mean, that's kind of wild that we're at that point, that there's so much going on, that David Bakhtiari being released by the Packers is kind of just a subplot at this point. But we have talked about it, Tom. We talked about how you thought it was kind of a foregone conclusion. There was just too much cap savings there for the team to bring back an injury risk, even somebody who could be a dominant left tackle still. And so like you said, they value youth. The Packers just got a lot younger, releasing Devondre Campbell, releasing David Bakhtiari. So even Tom, knowing this was coming, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, what do you think about David Bakhtiari's career going forward? Do you think he finds another? I would think he finds another team, right? I don't know enough about the injury to know if it's going to keep him from playing in 2025 or 2024, I should say, or and beyond. So what are your thoughts here on Bakhtiari?
I sort of feel like we've already done the podcast of him leaving. Right. It's almost, yeah. As I was writing the story of him leaving, I'm like, well, God, I've written this story like five times already, or, you know, about this is it for David Bakhtiari. Let's go over all his injuries, everything he's done for the Packers. You know, it was such a foregone conclusion that, you know, the only way he was going to stay if he changed his mind, wanted to play for the minimum salary. So, you know, to me, it flies under the radar because it's been talked about so much. And if the Packers hadn't gotten something out of Rashid Walker at the end of the year, I think we would be talking about it a lot more.
Right.
I think it's going to be a while before anybody signs Bakhtiari. I think he's still in his rehab, from what I understand, and he's still got a long road to go. So he wants to play, from what I've been told. And, you know, good luck to him. And, yeah, he'll probably wind up with the Jets, but they're gonna draft a left tackle or sign a left tackle or something. I think he'll try to play. I don't know if it'll happen. For his sake, I hope it does happen. You know, he's put in a lot of work to try to be back on the field. I also hope he can leave the game walking, you know, walking normally. And if he left today, he's done more than anybody ever expected of him and proved himself to be one of the best left tackles in the NFL over his time in the league. So, you know, I don't know what more there is to say about it. That's really it.
He'll be a Packers Hall of Famer. I don't know. As far as NFL, a Pro Football Hall of Fame, probably not, but I wouldn't rule it out necessarily. I don't know. Offensive line is so hard to gauge.
I mean, think about the guys who are in there, the Jonathan Ogdens and Anthony Munoz, and, you know, Trent Williams is going to be in there at some point. The guy from Seattle who's all of a sudden escaping my Russell Okung, you know, guys like that. They're just, you know, I don't know if his numbers will do that.
Yeah.
Magic. All pros are so important, especially at that position, really any position, so important. He's got two first team all pros, and he's absolutely a Packers Hall of Famer, no question about it. He lost his shot at Canton with the knee injury. If not for the knee injury, if he just keeps on that path for another 3-4 years, yeah, he's got a gold jacket. But two first-team All-Pros, just on the precedent, historically, I don't see how that's going to be enough to get him over that hump.
Yeah. Underrated sliding doors moment. He tears up that knee in 2020. And I think the Packers maybe go to the Super Bowl if he's healthy. You know, they beat the Rams that year in the playoffs, but then lose. That's the Buccaneers year. I'm not mixing these up, I don't think. I think that could have been the difference in that game. I think maybe they end up going to a Super Bowl that season. Ryan, when we walked out of San Francisco, speaking of the end of playoff journeys, we were talking about some of the guys that would be coming back. You said you felt very confidently that the Packers would bring Keyshawn Nixon back, which actually surprised me. I didn't think, despite the fact that he's now a two-time first-team All-Pro kick returner, I did not think that they would pay the money to bring him back. He's a versatile guy. He's obviously big on special teams. He acquitted himself fine as a member of the secondary, as a cornerback. But you were right. He's back on a 3-year deal. So what was it that made him the guy that the Packers, you know, of this free agency class, of the Packers that became free agents, what made him the guy that they couldn't live without?
Well, before I'll get to Keyshawn Nixon, but you said San Francisco, and I just to tie a bow on Bakhtiari, the thing that I will remember for the rest of my career is, when it comes to David Bakhtiari, is being in the visiting locker room at Levi's Stadium after the 2019 NFC Championship game, and it's just me and him. And I asked him, what's that like? You know, 3 in his first 6 years He was in an NFC championship game and couldn't get over that hump. And I can't tell you, it's David Bakhtiari we're talking about here. I can't say all the words on a family podcast that he used, but the look on his face, the tone of his voice, having lost his third, he said, I'm so annoyed. Like, it's so annoying. Like, they're right there. And so then you go a year later and they're the best team in the NFL. And he knows it. And if not for that injury, you know, they were right. That was the year. And of all things, it's David Bakhtiari. It ate at him inside to be so close and not get there.
Yeah.
To have it be his injury. Yeah. That'll be a memory that I take with me. As far as Keyshawn Nixon goes, they have not been able to fill that return position for over a decade. Spoon would know better than me. And I get that the NFL now with touchbacks being so high and all the rules change, you know, that return position's not what it used to be. Keyshawn Nixon last year was an all-pro by default because there just weren't enough returns in the league to have much competition for that distinction. But when you haven't been able to fill it, and you can see what filling it with someone that dynamic can do, you can't let him go. And, you know, what he does on defense, I don't know. I did the grades on Keyshawn Nixon, and it's fascinating because you could have a cut-up of him being – one of the best nickels in the league. There is good film of him at nickel. And then you could have a cut up of him being one of the worst in the league. There was so much good and bad with him in the slot. I certainly think that they need to go and get another slot corner that can be the starter when they're in nickel there. But when you think about, you know, it wasn't just, I know he's a kickoff return all pro, but he was a better punt returner than a more dynamic punt returner than Jaden Reed was last year. And Jaden Reed's going to be, he's going to get to a point where he's too important on this offense. And same thing happened with Randall Cobb. He's too important on this offense to be taking the kind of hits that you take at punt return. I mean, think about Minnesota last year when he put up that late fair catch and he got a shot and he got injured on the play. You can't have Jaden Reed, one of your most important offensive pieces, because what he does from the slot, taking hits as a punt returner, you just can't, that's not viable long-term. To me, you have Keyshawn Nixon focus on both return roles. He is dynamic with the football in his hands, and whatever he gives you on defense is secondary. That's an addition to, because the way he tilts the field when he's a returner, whether that's kickoffs or punts.
Yeah.
Well, I think, can I add something on that? You know, I think what allowed them to re-sign him is that other teams weren't that interested in him as a kick returner. So if you're playing in Indianapolis or Minnesota or you know, any place else where you're a dome stadium or a warm weather stadium, his impact is minimal because he's never going to get the ball. They're gonna kick it out of bounds. And even in the colder weather that the Packers had, teams are still able to kick it away from him or kick it really deep that he, you know, had to take it deep from the end zone. So for certain teams, he's more valuable, for Buffalo and Chicago and Cleveland. And for Green Bay, his return ability is more important than it is for, you know, the dome or warm weather stadiums. I think the Packers also valued him. I think their biggest value was as the slot corner. I think he fits what Halfley wants, which is a slot corner who can tackle. I mean, they got to have a guy with some size. They don't want the little guy who can't support the run. Keyshawn Nixon, you know, he misses tackles, but when he's on, he never hesitates. He's good, and he's still a novice at the position. And I think with their system, it'll be a lot easier for him. Slot was kind of complicated position under Joe Barry's system. So for the Packers, I think, you know, they will certainly try to better him with, you know, with a better guy in the draft. But I think he, you know, his ability to play slot corner is probably what got him $6 million instead of $4 million.
You know, Spoon, to kind of piggyback off that point, and also when I talk about the cutups, and you can make a, you have clips where he's one of the best slots in the league and one of the worst. The miss, you know, he led the secondary, he led the defense in missed tackles. I think the number is like 23 when I count on all of them on film. But he also had close to 100 tackles from the slot. Like, he was always involved, very active to the football. So, yeah, I can see an argument for, okay, let's cut down those missed tackles and let him be very involved. You know, if he doesn't, that's a liability. The missed tackles they're a big problem. But if they see him cutting down his missed tackles, then, yeah, then you got a slot corner with almost 100 tackles.
Nice career so far for an undrafted free agent. Keyshawn Nixon has really made the most of it. Tom, I won't get out of here without anything else you want to add about the other guy, Corey Ballantyne and Tyler Davis. Those are under the radar additions, you know, re-additions, re-ups, whatever the terminology is. But you know, Corey Ballantyne, you know, he contributed quite a bit last year. Tyler Davis is a guy that I know they like on special teams, who's been here a couple of years now. Anything about those guys, and maybe what questions remain for you among, I mean, we still don't know what's going to happen with Yosh Nijman and AJ Dillon, I guess, technically. Like, what's still out there that you maybe don't know for sure or that you have questions about?
Regarding Tyler Davis and Ballantyne, you know, I don't know if either will make the roster next year, but those are the kind of guys you got to have in camp. Like, you got to have, sometimes you have to have them on your 53-man roster. And Corey Ballantyne was a reason the Packers held a bit, not the reason, a big reason why they were able to, you know, kind of hold the ship during the last part of the season while Alexander was out. And Tyler Davis, the year before, led them in special teams snaps and was one of their, I think he was in the top four in special teams tackles. And was kind of showing a little bit at tight end. He's not going to be, you know, I mean, those two tight ends that they've got are their tight ends. But he can still help on special teams a lot, and those guys are valuable. Minimum wage guys like that are extremely valuable. What they do from here, you know, A.J. Dillon's not coming back. You know, Yosh Nijman, unless they can get him back on a really low deal. I don't know what anybody else is trying to thinks of him, but I bet they would take him back on a minimum deal. You know, the rest of the guys, Jonathan Owens went to the Bears. It's obvious from what I saw, he didn't get all that much, so the Packers must have been offering minimum. You know, Darnell Savage is gone, and there was no way the Packers were bringing him back for less than minimum. So I think a lot of their work is done. I think what we'll see is cuts and values. So as the free agency continues, you know, and the values kind of get equal with where we are in free agency, then I think they could do a little bit of shopping. But for them, you know, value or high value, they're done.
Do you guys know how hard this has been for me, someone who likes content, like especially the fun fan-facing content, where Jonathan Owens, Mr. Simone Biles, is now playing elsewhere. Aaron Jones is gone. David Bakhtiari is gone. AJ Dillon is probably gone. Who is going to be that person for me, guys? Who's left for me? Unless Jaire Alexander starts a podcast, which probably is a bad idea. Please, I don't know.
Well, if you buy me a place in Door County, I'll be the mayor up there. You know?
JR, I'm surprised you're not dressed in all black in mourning today.
It's been tough.
It's been a rough week for you.
It's been tough, man.
Dan Weider from the Chicago Tribune texted me, what do I need to know about Jonathan Owens?
One thing.
I was like,
did he know that who his wife is? Did he
I
know
don't
that?
No. But I told him the first thing you need to do is talk to your Clicks people and inform them that this is the happiest day of their life. That they will be just, you know, amassing millions of clicks over the course of the season, and that the Bears should keep him just for that reason.
I agree.
I also told him he had a solid year. He really did. He was he helped them out considerably. He's not what you want to be your starting. You want Xavier McKinney ahead of Jonathan Owens, but he played an important role for them last year, and I'm sure you, JR, are in mourning over that loss of Simone Biles. Maybe she'll be a closet Packers fan and you can stick with that. I don't know.
Already commented that she likes the idea of not having a connecting flight from O'Hare, basically.
Yeah.
To General Mitchell or wherever, or to Austin Straubel, wherever it is. But I don't know what I'm going to do, guys.
Here's the best case scenario for you, okay? And I saw this happen with David Bakhtiari. My first year on the Packers beat was 2014. That was David Bakhtiari's second year on the Packers beat. And you could tell, like, there was this burgeoning personality in there. But he's the young guy. So he put a clamp on it because he is on a line with Josh Sitton and Brian Bulaga and TJ Lang, and it wasn't his time yet to be outspoken. And then that changed, obviously. He became a megawatt personality, the rarest, a very entertaining offensive lineman. You don't see that very often. Your best case scenario, Jordan Love has that personality in there somewhere, JR. It was a clamp last year. It was his first year as a starter. He was very nose to the grindstone, tunnel vision, not going to say anything out of turn. But as he gets more comfortable and confident and more entrenched in his role as a franchise quarterback, maybe there's a big personality in there for you.
There could be. We've seen him. He was at a tennis match, I think, sitting next to Colin Kaepernick. So he's getting out there. He's out among the people. I wonder if Carrington Valentine, I wonder if he's interested in starting a podcast. I'm telling you
the guy who will be the, the mouth of the Packers is going to be Tucker Kraft.
Really? That surprises me.
That dude can talk. And I'll tell you why. It was the very first game. God, where was that they lost? It was an indoor game. My mind is around. Oh, it was Atlanta. And so he got called for, what was it, tripping or holding? Or it was some kind of tripping, I think.
Yeah.
And I remember going and asking him about it. And he said something like, that official was blind, or he doesn't know what the hell he's doing, or why is he in the league, or something like that. I put it in my story. I don't remember. It wasn't that bad. But it was pretty, like, for a rookie. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of JerMichael Finley when JerMichael Finley on one of his first games where he's playing with Aaron Rodgers and they just don't connect on a touchdown. And JerMichael Finley's quote was, "Oh, yeah, that guy's got to get the ball in a better place so I can go get it," that kind of told you what JerMichael Finley is going to be. And I kind of think Tucker Kraft might be in that
moment.
Hey, Tucker Kraft's the guy that will hurdle a tackler downfield, get hit by a helmet in a really bad area to get hit, like the worst area to get hit by a helmet, and then do the exact same thing the following week. Like, yeah, that guy's got personality.
Shouts to Tucker Kraft, South Dakota State men's and women's basketball teams qualifying for the NCAA tournament this week. I'm sure he's in a good place with that, a fellow jackrabbit as he is. What are we forgetting? Anything else, guys? Ryan, I guess I'll start with you if there's anything else that that you are interested in as we get through the latter half of free agency and, head towards the draft here.
No, I just give my compliments as a Spoon. He's had a hell of a week. You've done an incredible job chronicling all this free agency, and it's been a lot. It's been a whole lot. So I imagine that you're probably ready to get up to Door County and kind of some R&R, and it's much deserved.
Thanks. Appreciate it. I dread it every year, and it's frustrating because, the national guys all have pipelines to every agent, because you can see it's so obvious when they both have the same story at exactly the same time that agents are just texting them everything. But I think where our job is now is the analysis. They post the signing and then they're gone. They're ghost. And it's up to us to read what it means, how it happened, what was the background and things like that. And I hope we're doing that. I think we are. We're not trying. I think it was an interesting free agency, and like Okay, okay, a little bit more, and then maybe the draft. Next thing you know, it's raining. Yeah.
Read all really, about it.
You blink and it's like, okay.
Read all about it at PackersNews.com. You can find everything from Tom Silverstein, Ryan Wood. Our colleague Pete Doherty is there as well. And if you're looking for maybe a early Mother's Day gift, jsonline.com/deal is the place to find that. If you're finding us on YouTube, please like and subscribe. That helps us. We're on the Journal Sentinel YouTube feed. That helps us get out to more people. Thank you again for tuning into this this episode of the Green 19 podcast. We will be back with you again very soon. Bye-bye, everybody.